Welcome to the Social Podcast, where no discussion or debate is off limits.
Hey, everybody, welcome to your hump day. It is Wednesday here on The Social. Welcome to it.
Okay, so in the face of social media and internet detectives, when does creeping become creepy? So a woman wrote to the advice columnist Slate after finding out that her boyfriend of 2 years, guys, kept a file full of information about her before they had ever met. He had details about her job, her hobbies, friends, exes, even her favorite coffee shop. Would this be a deal breaker?
Yeah, look at everyone's faces as you were reading. We're like, oh my gosh, this is a boyfriend from you know where. Yeah, this would be a deal breaker for me. And I think even though they'd been together already for a little while, the story goes that she stumbled upon a file in his computer. So it wasn't like you're just run of the mill, like I'm going to Google this girl that I'm going to take on a date.
Right.
It literally went so deep, all the things that you listed. So I would immediately pause. And I'm not gonna, I don't say this lightly. I think as women, we all know the feeling of feeling like you could be in danger at the hands of a man in your midst. And I hate that I'm saying that out loud, but I right away would be frozen with fear because if you did it before we dated, you're probably obsessed with me a little bit. And what else are you doing behind my back? I'm gonna start looking for hidden cameras. Are you checking up on me at work? Yeah. Do you have my phone bugged? This relationship would be over, but I gotta say, you might need to rally some friends around because you don't know what this person would be capable of. I don't know. Am I going too far, you guys?
I mean, what if you found, I mean, I think it's just like, yeah, I agree with you to a point. Like, obviously, at the beginning stages, we found this out. But, like, they live together. She moved in. She obviously trusts him a lot. Again, I'm not saying that this is the way to, you know, get somebody. I think there is some weirdness going on. But, like, if Ryan, for example, Mel, if you found out today that he had a full file folder on you from ages ago, you wouldn't be creeped out. You'd think maybe that was a bit weird, but you know him now. Do you know what I mean?
Well, we've been married for a long time. I don't know that these people have been together that long for her to have that. Like, Ryan and I have been married for 13 years. If I found out now, we've got a history. But they're pretty new. I don't know if that changes things, but if it was me, it would change things. I'd be like, I'm just going to backstep out of here. Just need a bit of space.
I think so. The question is, at what point does it come, like, in this day and age of social media, at what point does our regular garden variety internet creeping, which I think we've all done, and if you haven't, you're out there and you haven't, like, fine, I'm going to give you a trophy. But, you know, for those of us who have the Twitter, the Instagram, the Facebook, or whatever, we've all creeped. At what point does it cross the line between, like, onside to offside?
And you know what?
I have a story.
Go ahead.
I have a story. I don't know. You guys can be the judge of this one. Years ago when I was starting out actually in the building that you're sitting in right now, I was working there and I went out for lunch across the street. And while I was standing in line waiting, this guy started chatting me up and he seemed friendly enough. And he was asking me questions. Where do you work? What do you do? It was fine. And then we just sort of parted ways. I go back to my desk and bing, in my inbox pops this email and it's from that guy. And he said, oh, I hope you don't think this is creepy, but I got your email address from your receptionist. I work across the building from you, and I actually know who you are. I've been watching you for a long time. Okay,
in what way watching you? Like through your window at home watching you?
No, from my window in my office.
Oh,
he
that's...
was watching me at the building across.
Oh.
And I gotta tell you, in that moment, I was equal parts like, oh, like, is he watching me now? Like, what
yes!
is this? But I was also kind of like, a part of me was kind of like, oh, well, you know, I mean, I appreciated his honesty and I was kind of flattered by the fact that he seemed captivated by me. Anyway, you can decide. Do you think it's creepy? I didn't date him.
But this is also like, this was pre-pandemic, but I will say, I bet you a lot of couples met that way during the pandemic. Wasn't that a big thing in New York City where people would see somebody in the building
across the way,
from them,
yes.
And they would put up notes on like the windows and they communicated. I also have a story and I mean, my husband's going to kill me for sharing this, but when I first met Mike, he already knew who I was. Like, I didn't know who he was, and he had already watched me on TV. He knew who I was, and he knew enough that I was working for TSN, sports television at the time, and I had said no athletes. I had a no athlete.
You had a
rule.
No athlete rule.
And he was a CFL player. And so when he came up to me to meet me, he actually lied to me, well, pseudo lied, and said he was an engineer, which, you know, CFL players and their salaries, he was actually an engineer in the offseason. But anyways, long story short, it was how he wanted to talk to me and how he like got to know me. And it wasn't until a few weeks later when he brought me a gift and wished me a happy birthday. And I was like, it's not my birthday. And he's like, oh, I read it on Wikipedia that today's your birthday. And that's how I found out that he was like totally creeping me and knew who I was and all these
things. Did it creep you out?
Well, no, I married him. So like, I obviously like thought it was sweet. So I think it's like, where is that, what Lainey was saying earlier is where is that line where we all, I mean, we would be lying if we said we didn't all Google search the person that we just met. We all go onto their Instagram pages and see what their lives are like.
I Google people I have never met.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's the point. You know, a girlfriend of yours says, oh, you know, I'm dating this guy. What do we all do around the table? Like, if we're having drinks, we pick up our phones, we start searching, and we find their Reddit handle. We find the MySpace handle that they buried from 15 years ago.
Ex-girlfriends?
All of that.
All the ex-girlfriends.
And then you find out who they know that you know, who the ex-girlfriends are. You do the two-finger zoom. Everybody knows the two-finger zoom on the room and the background of their house and the poster that they're standing behind. I mean, like, so, I mean, I think it's actually not, it's socially acceptable these days so that.
I think it's socially acceptable for women to do that on men because we want to make sure he doesn't end up to be a guy like this guy in this story.
That's actually a really good point.
I think it's socially acceptable for anyone. Like, to me, I think that's a standard behavior. I think, though, that, like, you know, AJ, for example, you're talking about Mike. So you found out that Mike Googled you. Later on, when you went over to his place, or maybe when you moved in together, did you find an Excel spreadsheet listing, like, the addresses? I think that is the jump over. That's when you jump the shark. The Excel spreadsheet is when I say, back it all up. We have a problem here.
Right. Yeah. Because some stuff stays in your head, but the minute that it starts actually being logged, like as like journalism records in history and you can actually see it like written out, I think that is where there's like a little bit of, it gets weird, right? When when it leaves your head.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, I mean, if anybody has an Excel spreadsheet on me, please know that a lot of information online about me is inaccurate. I am not 48, I'm actually 28. Thank you very much. Next, do you find yourself feeling angrier than usual these days? There could be some comfort though in knowing you're not alone. A writer for the Globe and Mail says, with COVID and stalling vaccination rates and travel restrictions, many people are having problems coping and getting angry. Come over to the angry side, everybody. Who's angry with me? Who's
angry with me? I don't think it's good. Obviously, I do feel a certain amount of anger. I think everyone does right now at a variety of things. Just like open your social media feed and there's any number of things that will cause rage. But I also think anger and fear are really closely related. That's why we've seen such a rise in public anger. It's a manifestation of fear. Mm. For me, I'm managing some of my pandemic rage, I think, by actively choosing to, like, you know, it's the things that we always hear. I'm doing more meditation. I'm getting outdoors more. I've made lifestyle changes. But the biggest thing is that I recognize that actually that anger is a waste of my energy from actually doing something proactive. And reminding myself in the moment is not always easy, but I do try. What do you guys doing?
Yeah, I'm still too anxious to be angry. My anxiety just went through the roof during the pandemic. I remember the first lockdown. I feel like the second or third lockdown, because I'm losing track, like it got really, really bad and it scared me. So I have not had anger in all of this. Watching someone who is very angry in public these days makes me very anxious because there's such an unpredictability.
Yes.
Ryan was at a coffee shop the other day. He was in line. He was next. And this guy comes barging in and he's like, oh, I need to talk to the manager. And Ryan's a 6'3" big guy. And he's like, well, this could go sideways. And he thought, what the heck is behind this anger? Someone got his bagel order wrong. And he wanted to speak to the manager. And I mean, that's the level at which this anger was. Now, if I was in the room, I would have been like, I'm actually going to go outside because I don't want to see anything go sideways over a bagel. So my anxiety gets real. Like when I sense it around me, I just want to go back into my personal lockdown as well. Hey, Denise on Facebook writes, I try not to get angry, but I work in a grocery store. I know who Denise is because she's a great viewer of the show. I work in a grocery store and I'm seeing anger like I've never seen before. Be careful, Denise.
Yeah, and like that goes along with your bagel story.
Yeah.
People are just getting upset over it. I haven't actually found that I'm more angry, to be honest, but I have noticed so much more anger around me, especially when working on Zoom. And I'm not sure if you guys at home feel this way, but when we all started working from home, well, many of us started working from home and using apps like Zoom, I think so many of us felt this sense of community with the people that were all in their own homes. And we had a bit of grace around, you know, kids running in and slowing down a meeting and stuff. And I don't feel that anymore. I feel like everybody's very short on Zoom, and I feel the hostility around me.
No, I think I agree with you. In certain settings, like the grocery store and what you were talking about, Mel, for sure, anger is, as Cynthia said, unproductive. I do think that for some people, anger can be productive. It can be very motivational. And we've heard many stories about people being angry over a certain situation. They were treated unfairly, and that has motivated them to do good things. I also think that there is, you know, in this conversation is about unproductive rage, like in traffic or whatever, that I would be guilty of that. But, you know, before we came on the show, I actually just read an article about someone who was angry, and they don't, like, there are two kinds of conversations about anger, right? The kind of anger that is unproductive in traffic, and then anger that is legitimate over inequities in the world, over racial inequality, for example. The anger that we're seeing on the streets in protests just this weekend. Women protested, millions or thousands of women protested a Texas abortion law. That anger, to me, is legitimate, and it needs to be put somewhere. It needs to be listened to. I think what makes people angry sometimes, and the most legitimate anger, is anger from people who are ignored.
Yes.
And I don't want to downplay that anger, because that is the anger that is the most valid.
It's getting some stuff done. Yeah, just don't do it on my flight this weekend, okay? Just don't do it there. Let's get to Oprah, because we always love when she starts talking about things. So we know she's really popular, but she says that up until recently, she only ever had 3 close friends. So when it comes to friendships, ladies, is it less is more, or is it the more the merrier? What are we thinking?
Do you ever?
You know what? I always had a huge group of friends. Like, I feel like my whole life I had, like, so many people around me, lots of acquaintances, lots of friends. And then I moved across the continent. You know, like 6-7 years ago, I moved to Los Angeles. And it was so interesting to me who stuck around. For many different reasons, but I feel like my friends group is now so small and so tight, and so many of those, and this I think is surprising as well, is so many of those friends are not friends I've had since I was younger. They're not lifelong friends. Some of my closest friends are women that I became friends with later in life, in my 30s, and I feel like that might be because as I stopped being, you know, an angsty teen or a rebellious in my 20s, I think that they kind of have the same worldview as I have now in my 30s, and the woman I want to be and the woman I am now. So I actually feel like a lot of my closest friends are later in life friends as well.
Yeah, I hear you. I think it changes depending on what phase you're in. I think the pandemic brought out different things in friendship.
True.
I think parenting brings out different things. Ilya, you mentioned moving, like all these different kinds of things change our lives. I will say this is what I never considered. You know, I've become very good friends with Jan Arden, and she once shared to me that she had an older friend who said to her, at a certain point in your life, you better start looking backwards and making friends who are younger than you.
Why?
I think she meant because eventually you're going to be old, and the friends around you are going to be dying. So you better make sure you have some younger friends, which I feel like I wonder if I was, that's the reason why we became so close.
She's expecting things from you later in life. Look out, Cynthia.
I don't know.
You know, when I was growing up, it was probably in my 20s, I had somebody say to me once something, I wish I could attribute it to the right person, who said, if you want good friends, you must first be a good friend.
Yes.
And it was that sort of time in your life when you're in and out of friend groups, and you kind of start to maybe long for something a more substantial and deeper. And I thought, that's the way. Like, if you really want good people around you, then are you being the friend that you want in your life? So that was the first thing. And I think also role models. I grew up in a very big, loud, matriarchal Filipino family, and my mother was the role model, and all her sisters and my aunts, they were the role models as to how and be with your girls in terms of how you talk, how you trust, how you treat people. And these are all the mamas. And because of them, they showed us what a tribe looks like, how to look out for your sister.
Yeah.
And so my cousins, who even though we're blood relatives,
They are like my closest friends. And I've got a large group of other friends who I'm not blood related to, but also feel like family. So I think the role model that my mother and my aunts gave me, I think I'm very blessed that they showed how to be a good friend, totally. You know, and I'm very lucky for that.
You actually gave me a really good piece of advice when I moved to LA. Do you remember?
Well, no.
I was having such a hard time meeting friends in LA. And, you know, I think it's just a harder city to meet people in because, like, everybody drives everywhere and the city's so sprawled out. And you said to me, you only need one.
This is true.
Do you remember that?
Just need one.
I said this
good
to my
friend.
Son recently.
Did you?
Yes.
Good
so,
advice.
AJ,
good
here's
advice.
My question to you. Did you, like, target people to be friends with? Because sometimes friends can be, like, we always think about dating as, like, oh, I see that guy, I want to date that guy, I see this girl, I want to do this, whatever. And, like, we don't talk about that where friendships are concerned, but it is kind of like that. You know, to go back to Oprah, she said that she only had three close friends. I wonder if it's because millions, literally millions of people wanted to be her friend.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Imagine being that person, because I've been on the other end. I've, like, noticed someone or talked to someone for 5 minutes at a party, and I've been like, I am obsessed with you. I want to be your friend so bad. And the desperation was oozing from me in a way that was.
And
like,
so you start making a file folder
yeah,
on them
exactly.
and collecting all the data?
Yeah, that person, I bet you Oprah senses that all the time. And I also have been on the receiving end. Like, you know, I'm not trying to big up myself, but, like, I've been on the receiving end where, like, someone has wanted to be friends with me so badly. And it's a little bit like, you know, chill out, you know, you can take it slow.
You can take it slow.
We don't have to, like, go. We don't have to go and be in a, like, a tight relationship. So, AJ, I'm wondering, for you and your friendships, like, did you target people? Were you like, I want to be that person's friend. I want to be that person's friend.
I did actually. We'll move on right after this very quickly. But I did actually target Mel. I literally walked down to her newsroom one day and was like, I watch you every morning. I have a huge crush on you. Can we be friends? And that's literally how.
That's actually, and it was after a nightclub. I really feel like, in retrospect, you were with your sister, and I actually realize now you picked me up.
I know, I totally picked you up. I totally did. It was a
full pickup. Why don't people talk about this more? Like, how to, like, friend date.
You know? Totally friend date.
This is a topic. We're putting a pin in this one.
I know, it's a good, and I am on, like, Bumble BFF and all those things to answer your question, Lainey. Okay, so to something very different now. Since its premiere, the South Korean series Squid Game has exploded in popularity. An article in The Independent suggests that it's because we're living in dystopian times, right? Huh. So people want that kind of thing reflected in what they're watching. So have you found yourself turning to dystopian content since the pandemic started? That kind of content where, like, the world is ending and there's lots of injustice and suffering. Like, have you guys been watching this kind of content?
Listen, it's my job to cover pop culture. So, and this Squid Game is one of the biggest pop culture story of the last few weeks. But I feel also validated because I've been talking about the entertainment that's been coming out of South Korea in terms of K-dramas and K-production, like, events. And their production values are so amazing that it was only a matter of time, and not really a matter of time with Squid Game. Think about, like, BTS, Blackpink, Parasite winning Best Picture at the Oscars. South Korean entertainment is at its, like, peak right now, and it's called Hallyu. It's called Korean Wave. The South Korean government actually 30 years ago made this a priority for soft diplomacy to spread Korean culture around the world. As for the dystopian content, I watch the show, I'm into it, I find it entertaining. I don't think that it's any more disturbing as The Handmaid's Tale, for example, that came out right during the rise of the Trump administration, where people were feeling pretty bleak. And we're coming out of, like, we're still in a pretty bleak time. In some territories, we're coming out maybe of the pandemic. At least things are opening up. But we all are holding the wounds of COVID-19. And, you know, this show is hitting right, like, those spots.
Yeah, which is why I'm not
interested.
Yeah, Cynthia, you're not in. I'm not in. I'm still watching Squid Game.
You are?
Yes. Just don't watch it before bed.
It's because Mel has FOMO.
Yeah. No, it's not FOMO. I guess a little bit, because if you're a parent during the pandemic, all my friends were like, oh, we got to the end of the internet. I'm like, I haven't watched anything. Okay, I've watched kids shows. There's a show called Just Add Magic. That's what I watched. And I'm trying to play a little bit of catch up. And I missed the Game of Thrones train because the ladies here are like hard in.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm not missing another cultural moment. So if I have a sliver of time, it's the one thing I'm watching. But I'm hate watching it, gotta say. Not that I don't love it. It's just, it's too dystopian. And my anxiety just goes like this.
Yeah.
I gotta meditate after Squid Game.
It's a hard no for me. I mean, I feel like I'm dealing with too much in my life. I can't handle it. And you know what? Like in daily life, like when I've spent the last year covering mass shootings, going into wildfires. Yeah. Like the last thing that I want to do when I come home is, like, I want escapism. I want to be able to watch rom-coms.
Emily in Paris.
Like, I was like my favorite thing I've watched. So I don't know. It's a hard no. Although, you know, Lainey, you do sell it really well. And it makes me so curious.
AJ, let me tell you this. Korean rom-coms are next level.
Okay.
So if you don't want to do the Korean dystopian, check out the Korean rom-com. I have one for you. I will text you a whole list, actually.
And I love it. I love it. That's how I'll do it.
I think there's something about this kind of comfort that we're getting during these dystopian times we're living through. Like, I can't do this. Like, I think I've shared before that Jason bought the board game Pandemic during the pandemic, and I was like, forget it.
No.
I played it once, and I lost. I was like, this is terrible. But I have found some odd comfort in listening to podcasts about sociopaths. Just to harken back to the beginning of our conversation, I think I have found entertainment in this, in the fact that I feel like I can control, like, oh, I'll be able to spot the sociopath now in my life when I encounter them. And I feel like everyone needs to watch tomorrow's show because Dr. Death, we have like the woman who was duped. And so I feel like it's become a pandemic thing. People want some kind of entertainment that they feel like they're learning something from that will help them in their future.
But Cynthia, that's like, the kind of dystopia. You're talking about sociopaths. So we are about to, like, we're very close to the premiere of Succession, which is a family of sociopaths. It's not dystopian and maybe not as violent, but they commit family violence on each other, emotional violence. It's just as disturbing. So, and it's a huge show. It's an award-winning show. And people are going to be, like, mainlining that one. So I don't know. Squid Game is disturbing, but Succession is equally as disturbing.
Yeah, it's different, though. I mean, you know, you're not necessarily killing people on camera. That's all. See, I'm giving away too much. I'm going to just stop right here.
Subscribe to The Social Podcast so you don't miss a fiery debate. Until next time, socialites.